Greensma.
Appointed by the court for Alvin Gaskins. In this case, as your honors know, it was a five-year narcotics trafficking conspiracy. My client, Alvin Gaskins, was one of 22 defendants charged. He went to trial, was broken up into groups, and he went to trial in the last group. There were three other defendants. We contend in our brief that there was no direct or circumstantial evidence of Scienter, that he knew of the narcotics trafficking conspiracy, and with that knowledge, intentionally and knowingly performed several acts which are otherwise facially innocent acts, assuming he performed some of them. Those acts were, there were four telephone calls that he was charged with, four substantive counts having to do with a plane reservation for this fellow Charles Brown. The only involvement Brown had in the narcotics trafficking conspiracy was PCP. One of the four defendants, a fellow named Bryant, in Gaskins' trial, was acquitted of all the PCP counts, and all the other defendants were found not guilty of PCP. In addition to which, Gaskins did not make any arrangements. The government showed by establishing the records from Southwest that his name was used to charge or make the reservation, but essentially, and we detailed in our brief, how Gaskins was essentially a lackey for a fellow named Miller, who was a co-defendant. He was the number two guy in sort of parallel defendants, Elon being the number one head guy in this. And
well, didn't he sell cocaine at least once?
In
while this conspiracy was going
that's what Rayshon Briggs contended, that in 2001, before he was even alleged to be a member of this, which was in 2003, that Briggs asked Gaskins if he could get him a ball of crack cocaine, and Gaskins got him, according to Briggs, $200 worth. The important fact, though, well, there's a couple of things. That isolated transaction law can't be used to prove he's a member of a conspiracy, but Briggs was the one who in 2004 was released to a halfway house specifically for the purpose of getting evidence against Gaskins. Briggs was facing life in prison, and he spent a lot of time with Gaskins. Gaskins took him around to find jobs, housing, and whatnot. And Briggs, they had no discussions about narcotics conspiracies. I think that actually, that 2001 thing that he talked about, if there was anybody that could get that information, it was Briggs. Briggs did not implicate Gaskins in the conspiracy at all, but he did implicate others, and he gave the FBI information about a big meeting that was going to take place, which Gaskins was not at. And as a result of that, the government got some very incriminating evidence against the other conspirators. So it's quite interesting that, and that was the only narcotics damaging, in my opinion, related evidence to Gaskins, and it was like way out here. There was nothing else in all that time, thousands of wiretaps, search warrants, surveillance. They had six or seven accomplices testifying. And some of those accomplices were working in that stash house every day. None of them implicated Gaskins. And one of the other acts that the government contends implicates him was a cell phone.
Can I just ask before you go on to that?
Yes.
That 2001 sale was before he was alleged to be part of the conspiracy.
Right.
And that was crack?
That was crack.
And the conspiracy that he was convicted of was heroin distribution?
It was heroin. Right. Right. And that's all that Briggs had to say about Gaskins. It was like, oh, and by the way, but they were with, and we discussed this in our brief, that he was with them almost every day for 3 months. Not a single conversation. And if I could tie something into that, they allege that, well, it's an incriminating act that Gaskins bought a cell phone and gave it to Miller in his own name. The application for the cell phone was spelled G-A-S-G-E-N. That's not how Gaskin spells his name. But that was, as the government argues, one of the cell phones used by Miller most extensively in the conspiracy. The government had taps on it, including calls with Gaskins. There is not one incriminating conversation in coded language or otherwise where they talk about narcotics, a narcotics transaction, money, anything like money related to narcotics, anything like that. And basically what the evidence showed was that he was chauffeuring Miller's son Bubbles to boxing matches. Miller had this private investigator firm, Green Team Investigations. He was running down to the courthouse to get records. Miller needed to close a loan on his house. He was running to get a loan check. He was going to the tax man. And so basically he was a gopher. And the evidence was so thin. I mean, the jury was really careful in this case. 14 days, the notes they passed to the judge, and we include them in our appendix. There's a typo here. This is misspelled. That's misspelled. And they acquitted Bryant, who was from St. Louis. They convicted. One thing that was unfortunate that Bryant's lawyers said was, in summation, and I can't attribute this to the government, this is a D.C. conspiracy. My client's from St. Louis. So there you have the guilt by association. And that's, in my estimation, what it was. But there was really no evidence of scienter. The government contends, I think the most damaging piece of evidence against Gaskins in the case was that lease. The government never proved that he filled out the lease. They never called the landlord. They never proved that Gaskins paid the rent. They never produced any checks. They just produced a lease. Gaskins was never in that apartment. The government had no proof he was ever in it. It was under surveillance. They had no fingerprints. And in all the tape-recorded conversations of every conspirator that they talked about, he never mentions once, you know, what's going on in the apartment. It's never referred to. There's no evidence he even knew it was done in his name. If I was the prosecutor in that case, I think the least I would do is subpoena somebody from the leasing office and so forth. But even if, and I make both arguments, even if you assume that he signed the lease, he was Miller's lackey. It could have been, and this is the Ingram case in the Supreme Court, it could have been for a pied-a-terre, it could have been to run a gambling operation. You have to prove that the person knew what was going on there. It doesn't have to be a confession, but he has to be in the presence of drugs. They have to be talking about that kind of circumstantial evidence. So what does the jury do? When the jury returns its verdict, and they were careful, as I said before, very careful, 14 days of deliberations with errors and everything, they found Miller and Elin guilty of a checkerboard of things. It wasn't just guilty on everything. They were really pretty thorough. And against Gaskins, they acquitted him of everything in the indictment. Okay, the four substantive counts they found not proven on all the specials for, you know, the allegations of acts that tied him into this conspiracy. And on the RICO conspiracy, which was number two, I'll get to the narcotics conspiracy number one in a second. I'm sorry?
I just cleared my throat.
Oh, okay. On the narcotics conspiracy, there was an allegation of a heroin transaction, not proven. One of the overt acts in the RICO conspiracy was in hac verba. They incorporated, they didn't just say incorporated by reference, they incorporated the narcotics conspiracy in count one, you know, with each controlled substance alleged, not proven as to every one. All right, then they get to count one, the narcotics conspiracy, and in their first verdict with Miller and Elin, and they find not proven. Not proven as to every object, and not proven as to the overt acts, and not proven, not proven, not proven. But they check guilty in the general verdict portion. And so if you find not proven, you know, it's been the case law as long as I can remember that If you fail to prove an object of a conspiracy, you cannot be found guilty. You have to agree to that object. And that's the whole thing with these special interrogatories, is it prevents spillover. And so I contend that the judge...
They're being used a lot now, the special interrogatories.
They are.
It's not something that... I'm far removed from the practice of law, and it's not something we did in my day or as a district judge. You used specials in a civil actions, but
right.
I did not recall seeing them in criminal cases.
Right. It's a new thing, and quite honestly, this is a case of first impression. And I think it's all come about because of the Apprendi case and the narcotics. Opinions didn't like them, the judge's opinions, because it said that they go through a process and where they go to these objects, well, okay, he did that, and thereby when they come to the general verdict, which is win or lose, it deprived them of their power of nullification, the jury's power of nullification, because they found he agreed to this, or he did that, or he did that, so they had to find him guilty. The only saving grace of them was that it prevented prejudicial spillover, because they had to look at each defendant and what he agreed to. Well, that he lost the benefit of that. And the judge, I think, erred giving the government a second bite of the apple. I want to save some time for rebuttal. Do I have three minutes and 30 seconds left? Okay, I'll stop then now.
If my colleagues have no questions, then we'll hear from the government.
All right, thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court, Suzanne Kurt on behalf of the United States of America. Your Honors, it's our contention that when measured up against the standard that the court must apply, that there is enough evidence when looked at altogether and in toto to uphold the jury's verdict that Mr. Gaskins was guilty of participating in the narcotics conspiracy.
Could you give us outline of what the evidence just against him is?
Yes.
Don't tell me about the whole conspiracy, but just what is it that is supposed to be enough to sustain a jury verdict just on him?
Yes, Your Honor. I note that Judge Garland referred to the fact that he was convicted of only the heroin conspiracy. But as the court notes on that particular issue, would know on that particular issue, he was the one who rented the apartment.
Right.
That was used.
What's our best evidence that he rented the apartment?
Well, I would like to point out to begin with, Your Honor, that it was never really contested below.
What's our best evidence that he rented the apartment?
His name was on the lease.
The apartment was rented in his name.
His Social Security number was on the lease. His mother's name was on the lease. But he rented the apartment under false pretenses. He stated on the lease that he was going to be the sole occupant of the apartment and indicating that he was going to live there. We also know that his name was on some of the utility bills that were recovered from the apartment up until the period through.
Okay, let's take that item of evidence then, that the apartment was rented by him or in his name, and his name was on utility bills. Now, what's the rest of the evidence that he's guilty of conspiracy?
And no one ever lived there in the apartment. Number two is the fact that he arranged numerous trips for Charles Brown to go to Kansas City on Los Angeles under extremely suspicious circumstances. We've given the court the chart that shows what these trips consist of, and they're essentially going one day and coming back the next. And this was done.
How many trips?
I believe it was five trips that he arranged.
Really, it's not numerous. It's five.
Well, five trips. He did not take the last trip because Gaskins arranged for, because he did not have the government identification that the trip was apparently booked under. But, Your Honor, we have to remember who these trips were arranged for and what the defense was in this particular case.
Please proceed with the evidence against Mr. Gaskins.
Yes. So the trips were arranged for an individual by the name of Charles Brown. He had a part-time job as a bus monitor for the District of Columbia Public Schools.
Does that somehow implicate Gaskins in the conspiracy that the man had a part-time job as a bus?
Yes, it does, because his defense was that he was doing all of this for Dream Team investigations.
Yet there is a defense.
Yes.
You have to prove your case. Now tell us what the elements are that prove your case.
Well,
the man being a bus driver doesn't sound like that implicates Gaskins in a drug conspiracy.
But it's hardly indicative of the fact that he was an investigator, and the court gets to look at all of the evidence, including the defense evidence. And there was, and not only was that highly suspicious, but renting an apartment.
Right now we have the renting of the apartment and arranging five trips. Now, well, please proceed with the evidence against Mr. Gaskins.
Weren't they paid for in cash and made the day before?
Yes, they were. They were made either, some were made the day of, some were made the day before. And they were paid in credit cards, not cash.
Wait a minute. They were not paid in cash?
No, they were. One was paid, I believe, in cash, but...
One was paid in cash.
We know that Miller was very mad when he paid one in cash because he told Gaskins not to do that. He said, you know, I don't like to do that, which raises suspicions. And let me talk about the conversations. We know that Gaskins handled money, and I would like to, I would like to focus in on one particular conversation. He went, when we know that, the co-conspirator, Toby Miller, was gathering the $30,000 to send out to Bryant, that's the money that was seized at BWI Airport. We know that Mr. Gaskins had a hand in gathering that money. And during the, you can read the tape where he is told, get some money. And he's not told, I need $30,000. He says, get a couple of dollars for me. I need it right away for my partners. Get as much as I can get. And we know he wasn't asking for $2. They spoke in, guarded terms.
You're going
in that
way over into arguing the case, and that's your job. I understand that. But right now, I really would like to have an outline of the evidence against Mr. Gaskins.
I've been giving that to you, Your Honor. So we've got.
I've been teasing it out of your argument.
The fraudulent leases, the extremely circumstances, extremely suspicious phone calls. The phone calls in which he's told to get money for the partners and get me a couple of dollars. We know that's not true. The extremely suspicious plane trips for a bus monitor who was supposed to be an investigator. I don't think so. And we know he handled financial matters, and he did checks for Miller, and we know he handled the credit card for Miller. And we know he rented the cell phone for Miller. Under his name, he rented the cell phone for Miller. He not only rented the apartment, but he also rented the cell phone that was used to make all of the telephone calls. And we do also know...
At the time, his name was spelled wrong?
Well, the records from the phone company were all in his correct name.
Okay.
The evidence did show that. And we do know, that he was familiar with the drug world. We do know that this conspiracy was alleged to have started in 1999, and it ended in the middle of 2004. During the period of time that he operated, we know that he sold distribution quantity, $250 worth of cocaine, to Rayshon Briggs. Now, that at least, and we know that Briggs asked him for that because he knew...
He wasn't alleged to be part of the conspiracy.
No, it was not. And we didn't argue it.
That was a single sale. How long is the conspiracy?
It ran from 1999 to 2004.
So from 5 years, 1999 to 2004, you have a single hand-to-hand drug sale, you have four telephone calls, and you have four, maybe five trips. And that makes him, that's enough to show, I mean, you would think that if he really were, as you say, the administrative person governing this drug deal, you would have this drug conspiracy over 5 years. You would have more than four phone calls.
We also have the renting of the apartment that was used.
Let me just pause over this.
Right.
But you don't have any more phone calls than that, right?
Right.
And the evidence was you wiretapped the phones, right?
We did not wiretap Gaskin's phones.
You wired all the other, you wiretapped other
and those,
phones.
Your Honor, those wiretaps didn't begin until February of 2004.
So between 2004 and 2005, not a single person mentioned Gaskins in connection with the drug.
The conspiracy ended in the middle of 2004. It was taken down in June. So the wiretaps began in February. So there's a reason why we don't have calls before that.
You have cooperating witnesses, right?
We do, but I would also like to focus on the fact that...
Before you do, just pause.
Yes.
Did even one cooperating witness testify he was a member of a drug conspiracy?
They didn't say he sold drugs, but he had a different role. I think the court needs to...
Did they say anything to suggest he knew that his role was a drug conspiracy? Any of your cooperating witnesses say anything about, for example, he arranged for my travel to get drugs or anything like that?
Brown knew that Gaskins had arranged for some of the travel.
But did Brown say any... Did Brown testify?
Yes, he did.
And did Brown testify anything about Gaskins knowing it was about drugs?
No, but that was the whole point. Miller kept these things separate.
Well, did
he
keep
very
it separate
smart.
From Gaskins? If that's your theory, how do we know he didn't keep it separate from Gaskins, then?
Because we know that Gaskins performed a different role. There were couriers, there were drivers, there were sellers, and there were buyers, and there were street people. All of these people played different but very critical roles. And I think the court also needs to realize, what was the defense in this case? There was no defense in this case that was actually...
There can be no defense at all. Mm-hmm. And he can still win on the question of the sufficiency of the evidence.
No question about that, but there was a defense in this case, and it was debunked in many different ways. And that the jury was entitled to take that into consideration when they were considering the verdict.
What was the defense? Go ahead.
The defense in the case was that all of these things were done for Dream Team investigations. That was the defense. These were all innocuous things, and that he had no knowledge. But I would like to point out, Your Honor, Judge Garland, that the earlier sale, the government didn't argue it was part of the conspiracy. The government argued that he was at least familiar with drugs, and it also showed that he was extremely, that testimony from Rayshon Briggs also showed how close and tight he was with Miller, who was definitely, Toby Miller, a prolific drug dealer. And they were very tight, and you can tell that from the telephone conversation. So when you
That does sound like guilt by association, counsel.
When you look at all of
that with a drug dealer.
When you look at all of these things together, Your Honor, and in context of what the defense was in this particular case.
He didn't testify, did he?
He did not testify.
The jury can't infer that he lied in his testimony or anything like that.
No.
Right. So I'm still puzzled by what is the evidence that he knew that all these arrangements, even if they were arrangements for an illegal operation, that he knew that the illegal operation was a drug deal. As compared to a prostitution ring, as compared to a gambling ring, as compared to a terrorist ring, any other kind of illegal operation. What's the evidence he knew it was about drugs?
Well, there, as we stated in our brief, the evidence is that the conspiracy was a narcotics conspiracy was absolutely
overwhelming. How did he know it? What's the evidence that he knew?
We know that there was a conspiracy, and we know that there was a heroin conspiracy. We know that he had been to Miller's house on numerous occasions. We know that he was very tight with Miller. We know that he's familiar with drugs distribution based on that incident with Briggs. But we also know that he was entrusted to do a different role. And he was entrusted...
That's a different question. You
right.
keep coming back to what his role in the
yes.
conspiracy was. But what you have to do is prove that he's part of the conspiracy before... I mean, that doesn't matter. We know that if he was in the conspiracy, he had a different role. Don't waste your time and ours by telling us that so many times.
Right. Well, it doesn't matter that he didn't handle drugs.
It matters greatly whether he knew that this was a drug.
He knew that the four telephone calls he participated in had to do with drugs.
It's very circumstantial. We agree. But if you look closely at the telephone calls, the first call, where it's very suspicious, Miller talks to him in guarded tones, and he's out in California doing we don't know what. Gaskins is out there. And he's out there. And Miller says to him, I want you to make arrangements for him to come back to where you're at. He doesn't mention the name. He doesn't say anything. They talk in these guarded tones. And then I think that the phone call where he tells Miller to gather money is very indicative of, you know, get this money for my partners. I need as much as I can possibly get. That's not consistent with a legitimate organization.
Well, maybe it's consistent with an illegitimate organization, but why is it only a drug organization? You have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was a drug organization.
Or that he knew it.
Right, but there was no suggestion that there was any other illegal organization going on. Miller had drug records at his apartment.
That's not their obligation. Yeah. It's your obligation to prove he knew it was a drug organization.
We did prove, no question, we proved up the conspiracy. No question, we proved up one of the places it was operating was Miller's basement where he lived. We know that the defendant went there. We know that he had been there on various times, and we know that he was very close to Miller on a regular basis.
What's Miller's connection to the Dream Team?
Miller had a license as Dream, he was probably, I guess you could safe to say, the head of Dream Team or one of the creators of Dream Team. He's the one that had the license that the...
It was his business.
Yes, his vision that the detective from the Metropolitan Police Department testified to.
What's the evidence that he actually, he is the one who arranged the lease rather than one of the other two using his name? Other than the fact his name's on it.
Well, his name is on it.
Well, they could have put your name. They could have put your name on it. Right. What's the evidence? There's no evidence from the landlord that he met personally with the person, is there?
His name's on it. His mother's name's on it.
Am I right about that? There's no evidence that anybody actually saw him sign this document.
No, there isn't. But
did anybody ever produce evidence that he was ever in the apartment?
No. But we do know that at least at one point that Miller offered to send him over there. And I would like to point out that whether he... His social security number was on that. And during, it was essentially conceded that he signed the lease. During closing argument, appellant's counsel specifically acknowledged that he did this. And he said, what the lease is about is running his name for credit. And he likened it to when a parent, you know, does something for a child.
Well, give us the words that you're relying on, not your characterization.
He said, doesn't the lease also give his social security number, his telephone number, the name of his supervisor? This is on page 140 of the November 6th transcript. Then he says, what the lease is about is running his name for credit. Sometimes parents will let a child have a lease and they will lease it for their child. And sometimes people will let credit be used to get phones and things like that. That's what's been shown in this case. So it was conceded essentially that he leased the apartment. And it was and leasing an apartment in a private building under false pretenses with a false name, and you're never going to live there. I meant to say false pretenses.
You just conceded this was a false name, counsel. We'll match that up with counsel's concession in the jury argument, and that comes out to
the
jury.
You're going to have to bear with me, Your Honor. It says, the lease says, who are the occupants? And he says, self, Alvin Gaskins. Nobody else, just himself. He never lived there.
That's where it ends, self.
It says, self, Alvin Gaskins, his date of birth, his, I guess, sex and relationship to himself, self. That's what it says. So he said he was going to live there. That is not the activity of a legitimate investigative agency. We know that. So pulling all of these things together, we think that when you compare it to, or when you apply the proper standard, whether any reasonable person could have found guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, we think there is enough evidence there. When you look at it all in toto and you include what the defense was and how...
What do you make of the jury coming back with the not proven on every one of the specifics and yet guilty on the offense?
On the count one conspiracy, they found him guilty, but then when it came to picking a particular drug, they did not do that. And as we stated in our brief, a couple of things. Number one, we don't really think this has been preserved. We think an abuse of discretion standard applies here. But we also think that this clearly falls within the judge's discretion of saying, okay, the jury clearly was confused.
I think Anytime an attorney uses the word clearly, I'm a little bit suspicious, and particularly perhaps this time. The argument would be that if the jury had actually found that that's not proven, then that's not just confusion. That's inconsistent with a guilty verdict.
We would agree.
It has to be proven before there can be a guilty verdict.
But Judge Lambert's language made it very clear that if that was their intention, then he had to be found not guilty of the narcotics conspiracy. When you look at the language that Judge Lambert used, you really can't find any fault with that. If any, he made it very clear that you have to find at least some usable quantity of a drug before you can do that. And to answer your question, Judge Santel, we do use these verdicts now all the time because of Apprendi, because we need to find drug quantity.
I certainly didn't mean that to be critical. It just it does constitute a change from the days when I was prosecuting.
Yes, it certainly is.
Trial adjudicating.
And me too, as well.
What's the government's best case that's closest to this, where a verdict for a drug conspiracy was upheld? What's the best case?
Well, Your Honor, we've cited cases that have different factors, the cell phone, the renting the apartment, but I would say to you that none of them are on all fours with our case.
I read the four of them. Not one of them looks even close to this case. Yes, a cell phone can be an element, but in the cell phone case, there's more than the element. Yes, leasing can be relevant, but in the leasing case, first of all, there's no doubt that he's the person who actually leased, and second, he told the police officer about the drugs. So which case is it that...
Well, I think we didn't cite those cases I will acknowledge that I didn't find anything that was on all fours with this type of case, although I did look. I will concede that. We cited those cases just for the factors that clearly are relevant. On the other hand, those cases that allegedly have more, our case has more too, because we have the banking issues, we have the handling five different types of plane trips, and we also have handling the credit card issue, and we also have gathering money to be given to one of the conspirators for purchase of drugs. So we do have more things.
I'm asking, are there any, in all the cases, there was something that showed the person knew about drugs, that it drugs, not circumstantial evidence that you could use to conclude about drugs, but actual drugs. Is there any case where it's all this kind of circumstantial evidence, which circumstantial in the sense that it's suspicious about wrongdoing, but not necessarily suspicious about drugs?
Well, I didn't find any that were exactly like this, but that doesn't mean that in this case the court shouldn't affirm, because of course every one of these cases...
Always has to be a first case.
Well, every one of these cases, as the court knows, is uniquely different. The facts are different in every single case. And none of those cases that we had all of the factors that we have here. They had some of them, but not all of them. We have more factors present here than we did have in those particular cases. So, and we have repeated activity here over a period of time. You know, the lease was in the previous year. The lease was in 2003, and he's still doing drug activity in 2004. So this is, and it's repeated. It's repeated, and he's paying the bills for the phones. He's doing repeated, you know, money.
How does he pay the bills for the phones?
Well, we know that towards the end of the period of time, he's on the phone with Miller, and they're talking about the phone bills. And he tells Miller, look, the bill is $600. And Miller is, you know, angry that it's $600. So I think it's a fair implication that Gaskins is also handling the phone bills because we know that he rented that phone in his name. So that I think that's a fair, fair implication to be drawn from that.
The best evidence of how the phone bill was paid is that conversation.
Yes. Well, we know the phone was in his name, and he was using
anything
the phone
about the payment, though?
Checks.
You didn't get anything?
No, we did not. We did not.
And the utility bills? You didn't get any checks showing him paying the utility
no,
bills?
No, we do know his name was on the utility bills, and they spanned up to the period of October.
For all we know, somebody else either had an account link or a check that paid the phone bill and the utility bill.
Well, there was no evidence there one way or another.
Well, you have the burden of proof. So
yes, we do.
Yeah,
yes.
So There is no evidence that he paid the phone bill.
Right.
There is no evidence that he paid the utility bill.
That's right.
Presumably both of those were paid with checks, right?
Well, we don't know that.
Well, utility bills? Yeah. You don't usually just come in with a bunch of quarters.
A lot of people do pay their bills in cash, utility bills in cash, or with money orders.
Subpoena the prosecutors did not subpoena the utility company to find out how it was paid?
I don't know if we did or if we didn't, but there was no evidence one way or another. But utility bills are often paid in cash.
Same with the cell phone bills.
Right. There was no evidence on cell phone bills.
I've got a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Gaskins was either a stooge or very clever. Did you put in any evidence about his level of sophistication, education?
In terms of education? No, we did not.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I appreciate the court's time and would ask you to confirm. Thank you.
Appellant had time left for rebuttal. We'll hear you in rebuttal as needed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. There's a lot of, I think, a lot of gross generalizations. I would respectfully urge the court to read my reply brief. It's only 23 pages long.
We read the briefs before we come to court.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You don't even have to ask.
Okay. Okay. This thing about the cash and he gathered cash, they don't say how much, that he knew what it was for, that it had any relation, that he had a discussion. They don't say any of that. They just say he gathered cash.
Is there a drug expert witness in this case who testified about use of cash or anything like that?
There was a drug expert. The FBI agent served as an expert witness, but I think it was mostly, I think there was some testimony about cash. While you're speaking of cash and the fruits, they never proved that Gaskins profited from, everybody was driving fancy cars and had mistresses and everything else. Gaskins is living with his mother in a rented apartment with a financed Pontiac Aztec from a credit union. He didn't have any of the trappings of that when they searched his, and I do think they had wiretaps on Gaskins' phone. As I stand here now, my recollection is not only on Miller's phone, but on Gaskins' phone. After all, they searched his apartment too. They got search warrants. Nothing. They got nothing. And he is a stooge. When they talk about the plane reservations for Charles Brown, what are they talking about? That his name is on it, or that Miller asked him to make a reservation? And Brown was the PCP guy, and the jury didn't believe it anyway. So, and I think, the jury signaled their desire, I think. And that's a lot of what the government's argument was, and I think before the jury as well, when they came up with...
We probably ought to straighten out, was there a tap on Gaskin's phone or not?
Mr. Hahn would know. John Hahn for the United States. I was one of the trial attorneys, but not one of the investigating attorneys on this case. Mm-hmm. My recollection is there was not a wiretap on Alvin.
As far as we know, there was not a wiretap on the phone. Thank you.
I think there was, but I'm...
You were not a trial counsel.
Is there something in the record?
Well, I had the wiretap transcripts and the affidavits. I mean...
All right, well, if you find something after you get back to your office
right.
today.
Send it to the court if you find something. Unless we receive something, we're assuming there was not.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel, for... Okay. Yeah. I'm assuming good faith on everybody's part. Do not misunderstand me.
I
think we need to know that.
Yeah, okay. They had many, many conversations with Gaskins tapped. And... I do recall that there was. I could be mistaken, so I'm not going to say absolutely, but I do recall that there was.
Right now, we'll assume there was not.
Okay, let's assume there was not. But they had many of his calls intercepted with Miller. He was close. Wouldn't there be a drug conversation? Again, I would like to thank the court. My time is up, I think. So,
thanks to both of counsel.
Okay. Thank you.
I believe you were appointed on this case. Counsel, Mr. Greenspan, and I want to thank you on behalf of the court and the United States for your service in this capacity.
Thank you.
And thanks always to the United States attorneys for your service to the country as well. Case is submitted. Call the next.